In this episode, I sit down with my friend Ashley Womble. He's a watchmaker from Georgia, a real estate investor, salt of the earth guy, 40 years in business, lots of experience, and a gentleman among gentlemen. I had fun, and I hope you enjoy listening. Welcome to the Bank with Life podcast. I'm your host, James Nethery. And you know, I love it when clients come on as guests. You know, our clients become our friends, right? And this gentleman is no different. He's an absolute pleasure. Every time I speak with him, I say, Ashley, you should come on and be a guest. People need to hear you. They'll love you. I mean, I'm edified every time that, you know, I have the pleasure of speaking with this man. So Ashley has decided that he would share his time with us today. And I'm very appreciative, Ashley. And then just let me say that Ashley's a watchmaker out of Georgia, done it for over 37, 38, 40 years. He'll get the details on that. I know he does things in real estate. He's been in business a long time, and he's very successful. Anyway, I would like to introduce you to Ashley, the watchmaker out of Georgia, the real estate investor. Ashley, how are you, sir?
I'm well today. Thank you. Hope you are, James.
I am.
And thank you for those lovely comments. I'm flattered and humbled. Very appreciative. And
well,
I to be here with you.
I mean it. You know, every time I don't know how often we talk fairly regular, you know, and have since about 2022. And it's always a joy, you know, and I'm always, like I said, I'm always edified and appreciative. You're a smart guy, easy to listen to, and a nice guy, salt of the earth kind of man. And you've got a lot of experience, right? Business, 40 years, you don't even look like you could be in business, you know, more than 20. And I'm not trying to, you know, flatter you. I'm just saying that's a long time. That's a lot of experience. But then it's a very specialized industry that you're in as well. Yep. And so you've dealt with a lot of people over that time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, but then comparatively, you're relatively new kind of to the infinite banking concept, but you're not new to life insurance. And so what I'd really like, and I don't want to control the narrative, but I would like just for you to share your background as much as you want to, you know, just however far back you want to go, and then just bring it right up to date and kind of share to the extent which you will or wish to, you know, your real estate, your business, the life insurance experience, the infinite banking concept. And, you know, that's kind of what I'm excited to hear anyway. So.
Well, gosh, where to begin? I come from a long line of planter class, seven or eight generations. They've been around a long time, ever since this guy named Sherman came through Georgia. You know, he was the one fond of playing with matches.
Yep.
And
people don't even realize, probably most people today, the history that they learn is not, it's a little sugar-coated, in my opinion. I'm not speaking for this man, but if people realize what Sherman did through the South, they'd be repulsed, my opinion.
Yep. let's just say that was a tough time, and it affected generations. But, you know, it's like any other tragedy or challenge. You get through it. Let's see. I was actually born in Jacksonville, and we moved to Cairo, where my father was from. And lived there until about 73 and moved to the Atlanta area. And been here ever since then, except for my time in the Air Force. So my background is military, music, and watches. And the watches paid a little bit better than the music, so here I am. but as you know, I still am involved with it, and it's part of my life, and I play every day, and that's my passion. I enjoy the watch business. It exposes me to a lot of different folks that walk a different path, and it's very interesting that way. And you meet a lot of, you know, great folks. So We've been very fortunate. We've been in this location for 30, coming on 37 years now, and it's worked out. I'm very thankful for it, and I think we'll be here till we don't want to be. So, thankfully, it's one of those kind of jobs you're inside and cool when it's hot out, and you're warm and safe inside when it's blistering cold out. So,
right,
not too hard on the body. So, yeah.
So you've been in the watch business. Well, you're coming on 38 years in that location. So you 38 to 40 years you've been in business, and it's good and it's successful, and it's kind of a niche market. Are there really that many watchmakers left in the big wide world?
There aren't. It's a challenging industry. The brands kind of control everything, or they do control everything. So you don't decide you're going to be in this business and buy a bunch of equipment and tools and just start off. It doesn't work that way. Because if you can't get training, tools, and support, you're not going to make it. And, you know, I've been in about every category that this business has to offer. I have done wholesale work for jewelers where I'm picking up and delivering, paying for the parts, the tools, the labor, providing all of that and getting 20% of the money. And that was the impetus behind getting out of that sector of this business and opening up my own business. And after we opened up here, about 10 years later, I got a knock on the door from the vice president of service for Omega. And we became their service center in the Southeast. And those were really good years. But then all of a sudden, all of us independents get a letter saying, thank you for your service. We appreciate you, but we're going to go a different direction. And that was a tough time. Had to let my folks go, tried to keep them on, didn't work out, really a hard time. But, you know, landed on our feet and just dug in and did what it takes. And thankfully, like you said, James, there aren't a lot of people doing this for those reasons. And if it weren't for our customer base that we built over these last 35 years, we'd be in trouble. So I'm very thankful for that, in a good and unique position in the industry. So
you had to build back after 10 years of a designated service division, or, you know, in quite a broad area. And
yes.
How long did it take you to build back? You know, did you have any banking experiences in? I mean, capital had to be an issue. you know.
Well, thankfully, we've never financed anything. Everything that we incurred expense on came out of pocket, because I don't like to finance things. And we were able to stay afloat and stay in the black because of that. We weren't heavily in debt. We had our running monthlies, as you call it. You know, your light, your gas, your materials, payroll. And we were able to survive that. Same thing with the pandemic. We didn't slow down at all. I guess we're kind of like the restaurant business or the bar business, where the times are good or bad, people are going to eat and drink. And they want their watches to run. And thankfully, at the risk of sounding boastful, most of the product that we work on is investment grade. So that owner, that person is going to take care of their watches. And it's been real good for us. And we talked a little bit earlier about, you know, everybody shovels a different size. And thankfully, we've got a pretty decent one. And it's enabled us to get involved with the IBC and discover a new way to bank our money. And, you know, the more I study it and the longer this progresses, the more I like it and appreciate it. And you are still, or I am rather, constantly discovering how powerful it is. And it gives you freedom from the constraints and contingencies with the traditional way of banking. I mean, you know, you get rid of the market volatility. It's guaranteed growth. Your money is safe from attack, like a trust. You earn compound, but you pay simple. Not to mention you pay at your ability or your comfortable pace. If something happens where the funds are light, they're not going to send you a red ink letter saying, hey, where's our money? Or ding your credit. It ends lost opportunity cost. It just goes on. It pays a dividend. And all of it is tax-free. I mean, everybody knows you don't pay tax on loan money, but everything inside the IBC program is tax-free. So what else could I say as far as a list of accolades?
Right. And that's a fair list. And you know, we could probably add more and more to that, you know. But it takes time to see these things, mm-hmm. you know, as you experience them. That's been my experience, and I continue to learn and continue to be impressed with the power of Nelson's work. Yeah. You know, and literally after being in the life insurance business 14 years for me, before I even knew that you could do with life insurance what you could do with life insurance, the whole idea, and you know, and I've been active in my profession, lots of different designations and affiliations and associations. And so I've been a student, right, of my profession, along with history and economics. And all of my, you know, I've had college level courses of these designations, which I don't retain or hold hardly any designations, but I did it for myself, you know, going through all this education, and I just wanted to learn. Mm-hmm. not a single one of them ever actually spent any time on controlling the banking function. Mm-hmm. None of them, and they still don't today, right? Mm-hmm. They're one little paragraph about cash value can be collateralized. You know, life insurance has a loan provision, might have been expanded over the last few years. I don't know, but no one talks about controlling the banking function, and then what that literally means to a business person or the all-American family home. You know, it just doesn't exist, you know. So, but I continue to be impressed. There's no question about what the infinite banking concept has done and can do. And mm-hmm. it's really only limited, in my opinion, between our ears, you know. But these things take time to see and experience. When did you first hear about or discover? How were you exposed to this idea of becoming your own banker? Do you remember?
Well, you know, as I am sitting in the assembly room here, you know, doing watch work, I've got the opportunity to sit down and listen to podcasts on the computer. And I like real estate, and I like trying to learn how to work your money a little better or more efficiently. And so, as you know, Google can fish things out. And all of a sudden, I kept hearing this business about IBC and the accolades and the benefits of it. And then the word whole life came up. And I immediately said, no, it doesn't work that way. And, you know, I've got a little bit of background, as you know, with that, because I was raised in Cairo, Georgia, which is where A.L. Williams is from. Mm-hmm. And I think we've had a brief conversation, but I remember when his father passed away. Small town, word gets around, everybody knows everyone. So, but anyway, interestingly, back in 83 or 84, where we lived in Mableton, Georgia, I had some very good friends I went to school with whose father got involved with the A.L. Williams concept. And it was, of course, the motto, buy term, invest the rest. So you get a negative idea in your mind about whole life, and the traditional is not a very good product. But this is very specific. So after I heard a podcast that you and Ryan had done, I wanted to get the book. It came in the mail. About 2 or 3 days later, Michelle and I went to one of our favorite places to be, and that's Disney World. I stayed in the room for 2 days reading this book. She wasn't very happy about it, but I was enthralled. So the more I read, the more I liked. And that's really where it came from. So it is a constant learning experience. It's still every now and then challenging to think untraditionally about how money is worked and handled. You know, to me, James, IBC requires education, discipline, and implementation. And it allows you to escape the contingencies associated with traditional ways of handling money. But you've got to take that step, and you've got to have that fortitude to understand how it works and implement the things that it takes to make it work. Like we all know now, don't be afraid to pay a premium. Don't steal the peas, on and on, the tenets. But when you understand how it works and how you recycle your money, it's one big circle. It becomes very apparent that there is no product out there like it. And it enables you to do things you heretofore weren't thinking about. For instance, for us, all of our expenses for the watch business gradually being paid for with IBC, properties, the costs of them, the repairs, refurbishment, taxes, mortgage pay downs, you know, with the velocity method using IBC. We have uncovered medical expenses, not a problem now. And here's one that you'll love eventually, probably an RV, and go wear it out on the highways.
Perfect.
And I know your sentiment on the RV thing, but trust me, it will not be a brand new situation. Be something affordable. But the list is innumerable, and that's why it's called the infinite banking concept. And it is true that the ultimate goal, as Mr. Nelson said many times, is to funnel your pay right through totally, eventually.
Yeah, that's a hard concept to make sense, and it's a worthy goal, and it's hard to get there. Mm-hmm. You know, it can be a challenge getting there, and especially if you try to take shortcuts, you know, try to get it all in there the first year, and and you know, combining the loan repayments, cash flows of that, and the capitalization, the premium, it's a challenge, or can be a challenge, but it can be done. You know, Nelson said it took him 14 years to get rid of the snakes and dragons. 14 years, you know, and I don't know that. Of course, I don't know what his ultimate income was, or nor do I know his ultimate premium. I don't know how close he got to that, but if he didn't achieve it, he never got off the path of that direction.
Yeah,
you know, and I got it. There's a lot there. A.L. Williams, you know, I know we have spoken about that before, because back in before 1991. So maybe in the late 80s somewhere, I was exposed to A.L. Williams, mm-hmm. right? And then I was all in. I thought that was the greatest thing ever. And, you know, and from 1991 for many years, several years, I went to work with a Fortune 500 company that their motto was buy term and invest the difference, right? And I was told, but I can't document it, but I was told that A.L. Williams was a regional vice president for them. You know, I don't know that to be true or not, but it makes sense. Their whole philosophy was the Fortune 500 company that I went to work for, right? Their whole philosophy was term and invest the difference. And back then in the late 80s, the invest the difference was mutual funds. You know, that's where, and of course, this Fortune 500 company owned a family of mutual funds. And actually, the front end load on those bad boys was 8.5%. Front end, can you imagine that, right? And then I remember back in the day explaining the challenge of explaining to people what a mutual fund was. You know, and now everybody owns them today. All their qualified plans are all in mutual funds, you know. But I believe that buy term and invest the difference, very long time.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it beats doing nothing. There's just better ways to invest. And don't get me wrong, I'm not disparaging anyone that is heavily invested in qualified plans,
right,
business with banks. All of that beats doing nothing. But can you imagine the billions, probably trillions of dollars out there in banks' savings account that folks have? It's dead money. It's not moving. Money's like a machine or your body. If you don't keep moving it, you're going to atrophy, and it's just a dead end. So, the buy term and invest, that's what I did, and I didn't know anything different. It's that if you follow the government approved plans, you'll wind up in a pretty good situation. And here again, I'm not begrudging folks that do that, but you know, if you wind up with an IRA that's worth $1 million and your money guy saying don't take more than 4 or 5% out, that's not a lot of money per year. Then you've got to split that 12 months and pay taxes on it. And at nighttime, you better pray that the market stays healthy.
Yeah, Uncle Guido's first in that line. You're paying taxes first before you split it 12 ways, right? I hear you.
So I've never been a big fan of qualified plans. That's why I got involved in real estate. There's so many benefits to it if you work it right. To me, that's my safety net. And very happy to have gotten involved with it. And that was back in 2001. So
that's been a minute. You know, I've spoke at different real estate groups in the past, and I would ask a real estate investor, you know, what's the main reason or reasons you invest in real estate? You know, what is that? You know, why do you do that? And they'd kind of wonder and ponder, and, you know, they'd come up with an answer. Let me see if I can answer the question. You know I asked a question, but let me see if I can answer the question before and see how close I am before you do. They're like, okay. And I say, well, you know, it's private property, right? Yeah. And it produces cash flows. Yep. And it's an appreciating asset. Yep. And there's a deferred benefit. You know, when you sell it, you're going to get more than what you. They're like, yep. And I said, you know, some of the characteristics of the infinite banking concept in life insurance. You know, it's a private asset. It's a cash flowing asset. It's an appreciating asset. And there's a deferred benefit. The characteristics are very similar. Not all of them, I get it. I mean, you don't have renters and repairs and all that, but those are all cash flows, you know. Mm-hmm. And most of them would generally agree with me, because that's the way I say. I love real estate myself. I like real estate. If I wasn't showing up here every day enjoying the clients and the new people that we get to speak with, I promise you I would have probably more real estate, and I would be off in the RV or overseas traveling.
Eating haggis.
Hey, yes, sir. I'm like, all day long.
You can have mine.
Okay. You know, and hanging out in Scotland, there's plenty of fried fish too, right? Fish and chips.
Yes, sir.
So, so you've been in real estate since about 2001. That's, mm-hmm. you know, that's a minute. When did, and you discovered the infinite banking concept, when was that about
when you discovered December it? Of 21, because we initiated the policy in 22. Yeah, because the 3rd year anniversary is coming up. So, you know, for me, I kind of vet everything and kind of pick it apart before I obligate or try to. And I couldn't find any substantial holes in the IBC model. It just is almost too good to be true. And you question it because you can't believe it has all these benefits, but it's not easy. Like I said, you've got to implement it with your best ability financially. You've got to have income to do this, but you start where you're at, like you said, thousands of times, and get it going and start as soon as you can. I love to talk IBC with a lot of young folks, 20s, 30s, early 40s, and they've got a strong advantage if they'll implement it. But I never ask them to start it or a policy without understanding the basics. And it's always Nelson's book. That's the Bible to me about the IBC philosophy. And so, you know, I get a little passionate about it and they ask me, what are you getting out of this? I said, not a dime. I'm an advocate, not a practitioner. But if you're interested in pursuing this, this is who I recommend calling. So, and you know who that is.
Well, so, I would hope it's me, but you know, there's there's a lot of people out there. You know, and I do appreciate that. What makes you so passionate with the younger people? Because I can relate to that. You know what drives you to? What do you think is the cause of your passion when it comes to the youth like that?
Because you can prevent so much inefficiency financially in their life. If they'll understand how the IBC works, the basics, the fundamentals, and compare that at their own pace and time and ability to the conventional programs that might be, you know, working with, whether it's a Roth or a traditional IRA or 401, whatever it is. And here again, I'm not knocking those things because they beat doing nothing. I'm just saying, you have to remember IBC is not an investment. It's a different way to bank. But if you implement it correctly and as strongly as you can, all you got to do is look at the illustrations for an individual, guaranteed, non-guaranteed. And after about 7 to 10, 12 years, it looks pretty substantial and exciting. And you've got total control over that. I also tell them when they ask me about the government-approved plans, I say, yeah, think about it, though. You're 28, you're 30 years old, and if you keep doing this, you're going to have a little bit of money at the end. But they tell you how much you can put in. They tell you when you have to take it out. And if it's not a Roth, they're going to tax it at your income level, at your tax bracket. They start thinking about that. You've got to put things in a literal sense for people to kind of get an idea of the differences that we're talking about here. And, you know, at the 55, 60, 65, 70 year old mark, most people are just really ready to get out of what they're doing, especially if you're in a corporate gig. And listen, I take my hat off to anyone that can stand a corporate situation for 30, 40, 50 years. But for me, retirement's not my vocabulary. I don't ever think about it. I like to think of it as passive income years. And that's what I stress to the young folks to get to your question. You're going to get to a point where you don't want to do what you're doing any longer and you're tired of it. And you've got to have passive income. And if you can manage your monthly expenses or your desires, such as vacations, new cars, helping your children, especially the legacy parts, a very catching thing too, because most of them have a child or two, and they start thinking about it. Nothing's more sobering than, you know, raising a child. Not that I know, Michelle and I couldn't have them, but we did help raise our nieces and nephews to a point. So I know a little bit about it. But the legacy part's very strong, and that gets their attention, and the passive income, because you're not going to make it on a weak IRA and supplementing it with whatever you can get from Social Security.
Right. And I agree with that.
You know, so they start, the stronger it is.
Do you find that they have a bit of a challenge looking that far into the future, you know, being so young? I know when I was 28, you know, I mean, I had a very broad idea that, you know, the very broad things that I would like. I'd like to be in this position or that position, or be able to do this or be able to do that. And, but no real clear path to get there, you know, other than hard work, right? It's a long time to think 20 years, 10, 15, 40 years into the future. It's kind of difficult. And it seems like the younger they are, not all of them, I'm not saying, I mean, we have more young clients than you can shake a stick at, and they're very impressive, you know. So not all of them have, well, I think they all have a bit of a challenge at some level. Some just have a greater challenge than others, you know, thinking that far into the future. Do you find that to be the case when you have conversations? Yeah.
And quite often, actually. And, you know, James, what I usually tell them is you don't understand and respect and appreciate getting older because you haven't lived and experienced what it means to do that. But I have. And for what it's worth, listen to me, because you're headed in the same direction. Everybody's going to die. Everybody's going to reach the age where they don't want to work anymore. You got to have passive income. You better start now and prepare for that day. And, you know, some get it. Some look to the future with that kind of concept. Some are instant now gratification and don't get it. Always there's tomorrow. And, well, you know, you can only save the savable, as they say. But again, I don't want to come across as a preacher about it. I'm just passionate because of the power that it involves and affords someone. And I enjoy talking with the younger folks about this. And, you know, like I said, when you start talking about taking care of their kids and the legacy facet of this, that's the attention getter.
Yeah,
because everybody wants the best for their kids.
Yeah, so. I like, and we, you know, we have children. Then I'll ask a young person, and it really doesn't matter how old they are, but if they're a young person, they have a young child, you know, 4, 5, or 6, or however old the young child may be. Mm-hmm. I'll ask them, you know, how fast did that 6 years pass? And they're all, to the person, it's like, oh my gosh, in a blink of an eye, it's so fast, can't believe it, you know? Mm-hmm. And then I gently tell them the next 6 years are going to go faster. You know, that's been my experience. And it's true. And when you're young, like I think I was about 41 years old when I discovered this, when I met Nelson, read his book and met him, and been working hard, you know, had some discipline, you know, we were doing things. I'm not saying they were all winning, but, you know, we were working hard, making an effort, right? And just like everybody else, man, if I'd have learned this at 22, I might not have been able to pay the premium that I could pay at age 42, but any amount of premium that I could have paid at age 22 would have made a huge difference, you know, because all of these parents and grandchildren, they're all driving cars. They're all financing cars. You either pay cash and give up the interest, or you formally finance and pay someone else interest. And there's nothing but financing your whole life. Right. And And then, and you're very positive, and I greatly appreciate that. I like to think I'm pretty positive too, but, you know, I'm also a realist, and I'm not saying that you're not, but it's like, it's almost like we're born into a debt slave construct and we don't even know it, you know, and it takes us a decade or two or three to even be aware of that. And it's like, oh no, this is maybe a little worse than I thought. And if I don't do something different, the outcome is not pretty, you know, just going along. And so a young person, it doesn't take a lot of capital, in my opinion, you know, and you referenced, you know, 10 or 15 years out into the future. And the further out you look at life insurance, when they're constructed, tailored to the individual, the further out you look, the better it gets, period. Mm-hmm. It's from the time of creation until the time that it ends, which would be your life when you graduate. It's been on an exponential curve, all of the numbers, the face amount, the cash value, the amount of capital that you have guaranteed access to and control of increases. And my point here is that these young people have all of this financing between now and passive income time. And when you bring the relativity of time, you know, and connect it to their children or their experiences or how many years since you graduated high school or college, and oh, the next 4 or 5 years are going to go much faster. And you're driving all these cars, you know, you're working hard. You got to have discipline. There's no question. If you don't have discipline, I don't care what you do, it's not going to work out as good as it could have otherwise. But and it's kind of like just the time, you know, the time value of money, you know, the idea of time. If you don't have a lot of money and you're young, you have a lot of time, you need to make that work to your advantage. Mm-hmm. You know, so I love conversations with young people, no question, because, you know, you just want them to do good. You want them to do better than you did.
Sure.
You know?
Absolutely.
So.
Well, you know, the young folks, they've got time on their side, but time is like any other commodity. You've got to learn how valuable it is and learn from folks that have been there and done that. You know, that old saying, learn from other people's mistakes. So. And we've all made mistakes. You can't lament it and beat yourself up. You just learn from it. That makes you stronger, and you can share that experience with young folks or people that you care about. I really enjoy doing that. It's very gratifying to expose younger folks to this concept. You know, James, when you set them down and you start looking at their actual numbers in their life, their house note, their car payments, on, and you start showing them that amortization table and what they're actually paying, they get sober real quick and start, you can tell that look hits their face, their countenance changes, and it makes a difference because, you know, you get complacent, for lack of a better word. You're making payments every month. You've got a little bit of money left over, you know, a little cash flow level there, and you think everything's okay, but it's their traditional setup, and you're paying so much more than you need to for those things. This exposes how to cancel all of that. You know, the velocity of banking on a house note. Yep. Don't do business with banks when it comes to financing home remodeling, cars, vacations. And then the other side of that coin is the worst side. And that is when you start financing lifestyle with credit cards at 12.99, 18.99, 29.99. And you start showing them those numbers and how difficult it is to get out of that cycle. Yep. And, they start to understand and get a little bit brighter picture, more vivid picture. So,
yep. Do you have conversations with, you know, older people? It's like you said earlier, whenever, you know, you were listening to podcast and the infinite banking concept, and then the word whole life came up, and it was like an immediate no to you from your, you know, history and your exposure and your thoughts that were, you know, shaped by your experience living close to A.O. Williams and the whole concept of buy term and invest the difference. Do you see that reaction to whole life is is still pretty common with people our age?
Yeah, most people have invested in the traditional whole life, and they have lived how inefficient it is. Mm-hmm. Then when you say whole life, they're forming a mental block because it scares them. And let's face it, anything that is out of the traditional way of insurance and banking finances is a little bit intimidating. Most people don't understand how money works. I'm not disparaging folks in general or wholesale. I'm just saying it's the truth. And when they're in a cycle and they've been in that cycle, work, pay, live, work, pay, live, it's hard to break that. It's hard to get them to turn that corner and see where they could be much better off and get away from the traditional things. James, I actually, you probably know this, but I have no idea how many traditional whole life policies are written up now. I would assume that the majority of new policies are IULs, variables, whatever. And then to revert back to the young folks, a lot of them ask, well, why haven't I ever heard about this? Even the older guys. And, you know, there aren't that many companies that write the policies that advocate IBC. It doesn't pay a whopping fat commission. The reasons are on and on and on. It just doesn't get that kind of exposure. It's like a cryptic thing almost. Yep. But it is gaining, I think. I'll tell you this. There's a baseball team here in Atlanta that does pretty good. And they're, most of those players' money guy is my client. He's my customer. Oh. Here. And I told him, we sat down and we discussed IBC, and his eyes were about this big around. Never heard of it. Yep. Never. He's, you know, he's in charge of a few bucks.
Yep.
And he was very impressed with it. And I think he's going to implement it in his life and may introduce it to the players. That is one area that it can be exposed. I know that some celebrities have gotten into this through their financial advisors, and some were responsible with it and some are not, you know.
Yep.
If you take care of it like it needs to be taken care of, don't steal the peas and on, it's so powerful. And I think to cap off the young folk part of this conversation is, the future belongs to you financially if you'll implement this, and here's the mathematical proof. Don't take my word for it. And then you've got children to take care of. It can be a legacy. It just folds over. Because every one of these children you have, that's an opportunity. So that's pretty much my platform when it comes to IBC. They swear and believe that I'm getting paid to do this.
Because you're passionate?
Yeah. Yeah, but I assure them I am not, and I don't. You know that. But yeah, I'm happy to have discovered it, like you and everyone else. I wish I'd known about it much earlier. Thankfully, we got started with a pretty healthy policy and going to add another one. So, yeah, it's been good to us. Thankfully, my boss, my bride, she's on board and understands it more and more. Every time she goes into the den, there's something on the television about IBC. But it's rocking and rolling pretty good, and I'm very happy with it, and I'm looking forward to the future.
Perfect. Would you mind sharing before, you know, we wrap up here? And you don't have to if you don't want to, but, you know, what some of the things you have done or planning to do or are mm-hmm. doing mm-hmm. with your policies?
We're going to use them, as I mentioned, to handle a lot of different things, but predominantly the real estate part of our life. We were doing the traditional year-to-year lease or long-term platform or model. And now we're refurbishing and furnishing the properties to a turnkey level. So in, we can do the midterm concept to real estate. Have you heard of the midterm?
No, tell me about it.
When a family's home is damaged from whatever, a fire, smoke damage, water flooding, trees, it doesn't matter, mold, they have got to have a place to live while the home is being repaired. And usually that's a 2 or 3 month endeavor, can be 6 months, it can get into a year depending on what the damage is. And in their homeowner's policy, I believe in Section D, it stipulates what they're entitled to as far as monthly allotment money. And they have complete autonomy over where they stay. They don't have to stay in a corporate apartment. They don't have to stay in an extended stay where, you know, everybody gets there at night and they're sitting on the bed looking at each other. They can stay in one of our properties forever, how long it takes to get their home repaired. And the good thing is we're dealing directly with the insurance provider. So it takes away the typical and general contingencies of real estate renting. The insurance company is paying you, and usually that's 3, 4, 5x what the monthly rate is for a long-term contract. So that makes financial sense. The return on the ROI is very, very good. And we're going to use IBC to help us do what we call subject to home buying, where you've heard of subject to. So that's the general direction for the real estate side of our life. I'm excited about it, ready to grow it. And the good thing here again is that generates that passive income we all covet when we don't want to work 10, 12 hours a day. And it just keeps going because people are always going to need a place to live. There are always going to be homes that are damaged, and people like staying in a well, clean, furnished home. And that's what we're doing. It's been a little bit of a challenge. You know, that's a little bit expensive, but the return makes it worth it.
Yeah, that sounds like an awful lot of cash flow. And, you know, and actually, you know, I mean, I've heard the midterm, and I've also heard of subject two, but, and I'm sure a lot of listeners do and have heard about subject two, but I'd like to, if you don't mind, and earlier, so I'd like for you to spend a little bit more time on subject two, but before that, and even earlier, you know, you're converting, right, the long-term rentals to midterm rentals, refurbishing and furnishing. And that's a lot of capital. You know, have you used any of the cash values collaterally to do any of the refurbish or the furnishing of your properties?
Not yet, but we are going to do that with a couple of properties in progress as we speak. Here's the thing, James. We thought we were going to be smart and hook a trailer up to my truck and drive all over Atlanta looking for deals on used furniture, yard sale, estate sale. Waste of time. It takes too much energy and time, and you don't have control over what you're buying. The color may not be right, might not fit just right. My bride is good at finding deals, and there are places like Rooms to Go and Ashley Furniture, 0% interest. So you just pay those monthly payments with IBC money.
I gotcha.
And that's how we managed that part of furnishing the homes. As far as hardware, you know, appliances, you find what fits and looks good, and then you can use IBC money for that too. Okay. But the subject too is an interesting concept because it's kind of in the same bucket as IBC because it's not traditional. You're helping a homeowner that maybe their spouse died or there's an illness, there's some kind of tragedy, or they're moving in a corporate situation. The list goes on and on, but you get them out of a situation. You save their credit. If there's equity in the home, then you take care of that with them. But you're getting that property without all of the hassle of, you know, qualification, going through the bank process where you're filling out a stack of papers like that. But you're going to a legal closing with an attorney and he's signing over that deed. You're simply taking over the payments and he's free and clear of that home. And the upshot is you're probably likely to get a home that's got a 2.5%, 3.5% interest rate instead of 5, 6, or 7. So there's a lot of pluses to that. Anytime you can get away from traditional financial criteria in underwriting and still stay above board and legal, I'm all for it. And that's what Subject to affords, and that's what IBC affords. So I love the idea of not doing business with third parties ever. And that's just liberating. It's empowering. It helps your mindset. You don't lay awake at night worrying if you can make next month's note and meet your obligations. You're not in that hard money bucket. And here again, if anybody's doing that, and they are, of course, I'm not knocking that. I'm just saying there is a better way. I hate to beat that to death, but there's a better way. So I'm kind of brand new. I'm one of your newbies with the IBC. But we're going to run it for as long as God lets us live.
3 years, coming up on 3 years. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we all got to start somewhere. And we all got to start when we can, you know, where we're at. So,
yeah, well,
it took you 6 months. You heard about it and you're implementing it in 6 months. I mean, that's an early adopter, sir.
Yeah, I reckon. I like the idea of being antiseptically clear with the young folks as to how the policies work, what kind of policy is best for them, what happens to their money when they start contributing to the IBC. You need to know what happens when you take a loan, how your money works and flows, where it's going, how it's worked by the insurance company. All of those questions need to be answered in layperson terms in an antiseptic, clear way. It's not just, hey, sign here, we're going to do this 70-30-60-40 policy, follow along and just pay X, Y, and Z. They need to understand how and why it works. You don't get that when you go to a stock company and you buy something like a variable or an IUL. Like you said, once you touch the print button on that policy, it's wrong. But the illustrations are fallacies. And if you look at the details of these stock company policies, they will not make you happy at all. And you and I have had conversations about that. Listen, I don't badmouth or disparage any agents out there. They're captured. That's what they know. They think it's the right thing to do. And they're just trying to earn a paycheck like the rest of us. But here again, there's a better way. So
I agree with you. I completely identify with the challenge of understanding, people don't kind of like I referred to earlier, trying to explain what a mutual fund was 30 years ago. Mm-hmm. That was a challenge, right? And trying to explain and get someone to consider what's possible, and then going through those mechanics, it's a challenge. The mechanics of a life insurance policy, it's not incredibly complicated, it's just different, right? You're until you put your hand to the plow, with this concept. You know, you are not even familiar with the portal that a life insurance company would provide a policyholder, and all of the numbers that show up. You know, yep, there's a death benefit, there's cash value, there's the loan interest rate. You know, there's a dividend, but you know, these are contracts, and they're literally annual contracts, right? And so a lot of these numbers move on the portal, which is really where it is. Because you can look at a life insurance illustration. Yes, they're wrong. There's no question. As soon as you push print, but they're kind of a guide path. You know, here's, I can pay this premium. I can expect that death benefit. I could expect this cash value. I could expect this much loan value, you know, and then when you start actually paying the premiums, taking a loan, making loan repayments, watching the money or the digits move around on those portals, it's very confusing, right? And then, you know, you're not even looking at all of that until you've understood at least to a level that you're comfortable with, right? Not just trust me, pay a premium, but, you know, it intellectually makes sense to you. And then you pay the premium and then you take the loan, and the numbers aren't moving until that activity is occurring, right? Premiums are made, loans are requested, loan repayments are made. Then those numbers start moving. It almost makes you feel like, man, I thought I had all this pretty down pat before I put my hand to the plow, and now I'm not so sure, you know. And so, but that generally takes, I don't know, 6 months to a year, maybe. Some people it bothers, some people it doesn't. It's not bad. It's just the mechanics of a life insurance policy, and none of us are used to that. You know, it's kind of my point there.
That's the irony. If you would agree, I think you would, when I say, that's the irony with the IBC. It's not a new thing. And then when you look at the history of the prominent participants, you know, a lot of people like to talk about the classically aristocrat class from the 19th century, 20th century, the Rothschilds, on and on and on. That is how they protect their money. This is not a new thing. Everybody knows who Walt Disney is.
Yep.
And by the way, there wouldn't be a Walt Disney if it hadn't been for Roy. Roy is the smart guy, the money, and he made everything happen.
His brother.
Remembered. But it's very true that when Disney had the idea for Disneyland, he didn't have any money. It was right after the war years. They were bankrupt nearly. And he sold his vacation home and cashed in a life insurance cash value policy to get the money together to draw up the plans and present it to the bankers and all of the guys in New York to fund Disneyland. A lot of people don't know that. So in a way, IBC is the reason Disneyland exists.
Yeah, that's a, you know, there's on and on, the pampered chef, you know, but back in that time though, and you talk about the Rothschilds, people probably don't know that, you know, there's all of these different insurance companies, stock, mutual. There's also something called a reinsurer, right? So a company, they take the risk. That's what insurance is, right? You're paying a premium to offset the risk to the insurer, right? Well, the insurers, and it happens in life insurance and automobile insurance, property and casualty insurance. We just don't necessarily hear about it very often at the you and me level every day. But the life insurance companies can use reinsurers where they offset the risk to a reinsurer, right? Mm-hmm. And there's, you know, and this has gone on for a long, long time. And there's a lot of things that go on in the life insurance business that most people don't even want to know. And it's not good, bad, or indifferent. It's just part of the business, right? Mm-hmm. But I'm saying all that to say here, there's a thing called reinsurers. And let me tell you what, and there's very few reinsurers, really big ones, historical, been around a long time in the world, right? And you wouldn't believe how many of them the Rothschilds own. So when you bring up, you know, Walt Disney, and I'm bringing up the Pampered Chef, and there's many others that have used life insurance, right? Several things have gone on. Number one, it's an efficient way. It's private. Right. It's private. It's private contract. You're controlling the premium, the cash value. Therefore, you're controlling the death benefit, although there's limits of what we can all have. Talk about generational, you know, wealth. I mean, so all of these blue bloods or your reference to these uber wealthy people, this is not new to them, just like art is not new to them, you know, investing and collecting in art. It's not new to them. We just don't do it very much, you know, or to their level. Right. But the Rothschilds own a lot, several of the big reinsurance companies. They not only do it at the family level, like every child's got to buy a policy and, you know, and there's, they have their own platform or their own method, their own process, whatever that family has put together, but they do it as a business, and they've done it as a business on a much higher level than most of us realize, you know. And two, and you go back 100 years, you know, the I think the mutual fund, the first one came out around the in the 1930s, the mid 30s to the late 30s. Well, most people didn't have money to put into the stock market, you know. It, you have a local bank, it, but if you're a middle affluent, you know, you bought life insurance. That's where people put money. They didn't have IRAs, 401ks, and all of that. They put money in life insurance. So, well, if the life insurance policy, the contract, has a loan provision, you know, then you have access to capital. And I've met many people, and I've heard them share their stories about their parents and their grandparents. I mean, I've got a client that he got all excited. He became a client, you know, and he shares this with his mother. And I believe his mother was in her 80s or 90s at the time. He had already lost his father. And his mother said, oh, yeah, you know, your daddy bought 6 properties financed through a life insurance policy. So they were doing it, right? And their children didn't know. They didn't know the power necessarily of what they were doing. They just know they got 5 or 6 properties and they had capital, control of capital to make that happen, you know. And then, you know, so my point here is, yep, it has gone on for a very long time, you know. And, anyway,
it's really a strong history. And what's commendable about the IBC concept is the companies that write policies that allow that to happen have never missed paying a dividend through 5 or 6 major wars, 2 or 3 really bad economic situations, especially in the crash of 29. Now, can you imagine the heartbreak of all those millions of people that lost nearly everything they had because the market turned so strongly, but they were in that situation because they had bought stocks on margins. So they were at the total mercy of the market. Horrible. Ooh, and they would have been much better off had they put their money in an insurance product. Yep. But hindsight's 20/20.
Right. Now, and, you know, there was a run on life insurance companies at the same time that there were run on banks. There were runs on banks, right? Banks collapsed. You know, I don't know of not a major life insurance company that you can practice the infinite banking concept today with, right? Mutual company, they went through that. Not well, obviously, they didn't collapse, right? There was a run on the life insurance companies, just like there was a run on the banks. And the life insurance companies had the capital, and the banks didn't. Right. And neither did the stock, bro. You know, leverage, you know, margin is nothing but leverage. Right. And you can, I don't know what the margin limits are today, but I'm somewhere up 10 to 1. You know, oh, I have $100,000, but I want to control $1 million worth of a stock. It's like, yeah, okay. So caveat, it is a different. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Caveat enter.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, sir, I could literally talk to you all day because I like you and you're a cool person with a lot of experience. And, you know, you say you're a newbie. I don't feel like you're a newbie. I don't know if it's, you know, I don't know why. I just don't feel like you're a newbie.
Well, thank you.
3 years.
My sentiments exactly, James. It's a pleasure to have spent time with you. And it's always good to talk with you. We don't talk often enough, but I know you're busy and the day gets by, but y'all are top of mind, and I'm very glad to have gotten into this concept and have it be such a strong part of my financial life.
Well, thank you for those kind words, sir. Maybe I could fly down to Atlanta sometime and get in the big league with timepieces.
Hey, you know, yeah, come on over. We'll put you up. We got a nice little guest house right next to mine, and place will be yours. Just remember to wear your stretchy pants, because my wife knows how to put the feed bag on.
I appreciate that, and standing offer this way too. I know you like to swim. You got a pool. We got a pool. We have a little guest, you know, quarters. And
yes, sir.
My wife, she's a really, really good cook, but you know, some of these restaurants around here are pretty tough.
Yeah.
So, all right, Ashley, anything in parting you want to share or say, or are we good?
No, I think I've about done my part. I'm very appreciative for you to have me on and be a part of the long list of fantastic folks and guests that you've had. So thank you very much.
You're welcome. And thank you for taking the time out of your day. I know I know you're busy. You know, you say I'm busy. I know you're busy too, sir. And so I appreciate you. And hope you have a great rest of your day and everything continues to go your way, sir.
I will. Every day's Friday at my house. There's no telling what my wife has planned. You know, she invents recipes.
Oh.
That's what she does every day. Oh, she's quite the quintessential housewife and very talented. And
I can't believe you're not 300 pounds.
That's what everybody says. You know, I guess it's all overtime I'm working here. They don't pay me for it, but I can do it. I don't know. But thank you again. And looking forward to talking with you. I think we have a follow up here in the next week or so.
Yep.
You and Jake. So I'm looking forward to that. And Just stay prosperous, stay healthy, and be safe. Until next time.
Same. Thank you, Ashley. And we'll see you.
Thank you for joining us on the Banking with Life podcast. If you're watching on YouTube, make sure to like and subscribe and click on that little notification bell. Otherwise, join us on Apple Podcasts and Stitcher for weekly content.